Podcast.
Listen to The Organist, the culturally omnivorous, intellectually ravenous podcast from the editors of The Believer magazine.
Part of poetry is learning how to speak.
Chilly Billy, Chilly Billy.
I am also a horse.
I really value my life, even though I know it's debatable whether I'm even really alive.
The right reading for this is the one I'm giving it.
Find The Organist on KCRW.com or wherever you download podcasts.
From the Independent Producer Project and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional, a program of true stories and personal documentaries. And this week, it's a trip through the history of a reassuring technology that over time has become something more disturbing than that and might be in your house right now. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional, and wake up, baby.
A man watches a baby on a small screen. This man has never met this baby. He's in another country, thousands of miles away. And each night, he watches a different baby.
Experiences for a parent is to lose sight of their child. This little device will certainly help.
If you have a baby, you probably have a monitor.
And relieve all of your anxiety.
As soon as you start surveilling, you make it possible for other people to use that information.
Relieve all of your anxiety.
How many hours has he spent watching the baby sleeping?
This camera was being broadcast to the world.
Relieve all of your anxiety.
They woke up in the middle of the night to hear a guy yelling,
"Wake up, baby, wake up, baby.
Relieve all of your anxiety.
Wake up, baby, wake up, baby.
Relieve all of your anxiety."
A radio nurse now brings the nursery into the living room, kitchen, or any other room desired. When a child is sleeping or playing in a room when no older persons are present, every sound within that room can be transmitted to any spot in the house.
Zenith Corporation's Radio Nurse, one of the world's first baby monitors. I think they went on sale in 1938.
The outfit consists of a pickup unit placed near the child to be watched and a loudspeaker, which can be placed in any convenient location.
My name is Dakin Hart, and I'm the senior curator at the Noguchi Museum in Long Island City, New York. The case was designed by Isamu Noguchi. It's made out of Bakelite, so it's kind of a walnutty color. And the whole idea of getting Noguchi to do it was to produce something elegant enough to fit into any very well-to-do home. The two things that people normally compare it to are a kendo mask, a face mask for Japanese sword fighting, and then it also looks a little bit like a nurse's hood, an old-fashioned nurse's hood. It's not sweet. It is reserved and elegant. In fact, the ads show men in three-piece suits, women in beautiful evening gowns, playing bridge, eating dinner, with one of these radio nurse heads sort of perched on a table or on a sideboard. So the whole idea was that they would fit into a very elegant interior. I think the retail price originally was $29.95, which in 1938, $37, $38 is actually a lot.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
I'm a sleepy bear.
This is our first baby monitor. It made his crying seem really loud, didn't it?
Yes.
Like it was like a demon. It was like, yes.
So you'd go in and go, oh, he's not actually crying that much.
Yeah, okay. This would amplify and make it sound evil.
Turn the volume down a bit.
But a good sign, you know, you'd hear it and you'd go running quite quickly.
From the different cries, you can tell different what things are wrong. You know if they're just fussing, so you can leave them.
Yeah.
Or you know if they're really in pain, or if they've got wind or something, you can go and sort them out, and then you can leave them again. So.
Once upon a time, there was a robot who had very clicky arms, and he didn't know why they were so clicky and why they made such a noise.
It's funny as well, listening to Spencer read Sunny's stories, like sometimes the monitor would be left on.
But he asked his friend, the rabbit.
And I'd be sat downstairs listening to this amazing story that Spencer's made up for Sunny.
And the rabbit didn't either.
If I'd been sat there, it would have been a different story, for a different audience, because he wasn't actually expecting me to be listening downstairs.
So off they went, the rabbit and the robot, to find out why he had screamed.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
Plain view of the Lindbergh house shows its isolated location near Hopewell, New Jersey. The $50,000 mansion stands far back from the public road. See the end second story window? That's the very nursery window against which the kidnappers placed that ladder under cover of night and stole away with baby Lindbergh.
Charles Lindbergh's child was kidnapped from his crib.
When stolen, he was dressed in a white sleeping suit.
There was a nurse, a full-time nurse, and she had put the baby down to sleep.
His hair is fair and curly.
And a couple hours later, she went in to check on him, and he wasn't there. And in the meantime, the father, Charles Lindbergh, who was in his office just below, had heard a little bit of noise, but figured that it was just something in the kitchen. And then he later realized that that probably was this kidnapper climbing up into the window using a ladder that they later found parts of outside and spiriting away his son. Supposed intent of the Lindbergh kidnapping was a large ransom. But in the end, it didn't matter because something went horribly wrong and the child was murdered. The case stayed in the news because of first the search to find the perpetrator, the kidnapper, the trial of the kidnapper, and then ultimately the execution. He was executed in 1936. It was big news. H.L. Mencken called it the biggest story since the resurrection.
Lindbergh was such a hero.
Intelligent, industrious, energetic, dependable.
He had this kind of iconic heroic status.
Quick of reaction. Serious, deliberate.
That traumatic consequences of the kidnapping was likely to have had such a big impact. And I think that when you have such a case being attached to a very major public figure, it's not particularly surprising that it just ran and ran for a long time.
Charles A. Lindbergh.
Yeah, I'm Frank Ferretti. I'm a professor of sociology at the University of Kent, author and social commentator.
Protect your child against kidnapping.
Now, I don't think Zenith ever created sort of explicit scare advertising, but many retailers created their own advertising.
A helpless little child left alone for a few moments. Then a silent household left alone forever. A radio nurse in your home warns, it can't happen here.
It can't happen here. And of course, it is a kidnapping, clearly calling to the Lindbergh kidnapping.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
Comfort and titillation somehow seem to go kind of hand in hand in these things.
The feeling of panic can be overwhelming. That's every parent's nightmare.
Say you had a radio nurse, say you were one of the very first buyers, and you're like this couple that's entertaining their friends playing bridge in the living room. And so you're at the same time talking about how beautiful this head is and what a magnificent object it is and how lustrous the Bakelite is and really being into it as a consumer product. But then at the same time, you're explaining what it's for, you know, because I'm terrified my child is going to be kidnapped. Totally irrationally.
That's every parent's nightmare.
I mean, for the, you know, average random rich person in Westchester County, there's absolutely no reason to believe that your child will be kidnapped. It's a form of narcissism. Be very, very afraid. But isn't it beautiful? It's a very strange combination.
She's going to have the awesome opportunity to go visit her uncle in New York City. But that scares me half to death to have my little girl in such a big city.
There are posters like this one all over New York City. All of them asking for help in locating 6-year-old Eitan Pates. On his way to a school bus stop, 2 blocks from his home, Eitan simply disappeared. And his disappearance has led to the most extensive search for a missing child in New York City in decades.
It's one of the few examples where a single child with a name, has this kind of recognition factor.
Every year, nearly 800,000 kids are reported missing.
Imagination becomes refracted through these experiences in a way that you're not even aware of.
More than 58,000 are abducted by a stranger.
In the 1980s, you know, what you would have are a kidnapping of a child told in a lot of detail. You had the name and everything about the child was very clearly spelled out, that this is a child that's been kidnapped, this is a child that's been killed or whatever. By the time you got to the late 1990s, all you had to do was to transmit an image of a child, and that was enough. And everybody assumed there's a problem there. We had developed a disposition to fear the worst. It's important to understand that our fears for children being abducted are really a sublimated expression of our own existential identities.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This one, you can just hear them. There's a little microphone upstairs, and the sound comes out here. It's not a very high-tech device. This house is so small, we don't actually need it. It's lovely sometimes. I mean, you hear, particularly in the morning, if I've had to get up early and I'm coming down here and just having breakfast really quietly, and they'll wake up quite a lot before you think they're waking up. You normally think they wake up around the same time as us, but actually they wake up quite a bit before, and you can hear they're starting to natter.
Yeah.
Because Toby, he's only 1.5, he can't really talk, and Kai would be talking to him. He'd just be going, ah, bah, 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 bah. And Kai would be, hey, that's right, Toby, yeah, absolutely. It does give you an insight into what they're doing when you're not around, which is kind of lovely. It's like having a portal into a world that, by your very presence, you would never be allowed access to.
They weren't just marketing to parents. You've also got Grandma in her sick bed. Early life monitoring and end of life monitoring.
Unfortunately, I lost my dad last year and helped my mom nurse him for the last 3 months of his life. Towards the end, he was so frail, he couldn't really talk much. He just lay there. When he was snoring, it was actually quite, oh, good, he's having a good sleep. And usually you don't enjoy listening to snoring. Almost lulled me to sleep. It was only when it stopped that I'd kind of wake up and think, oh. Anyway, after a while, I started getting really tired because it was up every 2 hours. So we got a night carer. The only problem is that you need to remember to switch it off in the morning, because sadly, one morning, my mom said something inappropriate about the carer, and she was still there and she heard. You don't realize that, you know, you could pick up everything.
There used to be a couple next door with a baby who was almost exactly the same age as Kai. And I'd be working away and I'd hear this really faint baby crying. And I'd go down and look and there'd be nothing. It started getting quite sort of uncanny. And then I realised, I think they were astonishingly sensitive at the precise frequency of babies crying, and it was picking up next door's baby through the wall. I couldn't hear the baby. It was only the machine could hear it. And then I could hear it because the machine could hear it.
If you have children, you know that they can disappear in a second. Abduction, child abuse, and kidnapping are what you think about.
The singular message that came across was that, you know, if you're a responsible parent, you will purchase one of these things.
Place multiple monitors around your home for ultimate security.
Protect them with a GPS child tracking device.
It's a height of irresponsibility not to use these particular devices.
Which makes you no longer worried about your baby.
And relieve all of your anxiety.
Almost like a form of emotional blackmail, where marketing is used to prey on your insecurity.
New technology that could protect your kids from the grasp of a child abductor.
There is an undercurrent with all products for children, whatever the thing is, that it's fundamental to parenting, and that if you're not using it or not doing it, you're not doing your job, you're not being a good parent.
Don't leave your loved ones without this protection another day. The Guardian Ear contains a condenser-type microphone, speech amplifier, and modulator oscillator circuit. The generated signal is conducted by means of the lighting circuit and intercepted by the radio.
It plugs in. It's on AC power.
It was designed to transmit the signal from the baby's nursery to wherever the adults were listening to it over the mains wiring in the house.
The problem was that the electrical system in houses were not nearly as well shielded as they are now.
Although frequencies weren't very heavily used, where they were used, there wasn't a lot of control over how pure they were, how much extra noise they generated. I'm David Hemingway. I'm a senior spectrum manager at the BBC. There would have been the potential for interference from, in those days, very high power broadcast radio transmitters.
So there was a lot of interference.
Make sure you stock up now on Christmas specials such as these.
Which was, I think, you know, very disorienting and upsetting for people.
For one day only, the fiend that stalks Missouri.
He's covered corn chips. 300 size cans.
Someone nearby could plug a device in and listen for it on a similar device, because mains wiring in the house would conduct that signal into neighbouring houses. But more likely, because this mains wiring radiates, anyone passing with a radio receiver tuned into more or less the right frequency would have been able to hear baby sleeping.
In trying to protect yourself from kidnappers, what you've actually done is facilitate a kidnapping. A potential kidnapper could be sitting right outside your house, tuned in.
You know, a lot of the wealthier neighborhoods had the same equipment, and they would have to switch them to different channels or get a different brand or something like that, because they would most frequently, like, be able, you know, to hear your neighbor's child. I've heard lots of stories like that.
I mean, presumably there's a limited number of frequencies they can broadcast over. So, you know, it's not impossible to imagine that someone could just sit there and, you know, listen to me. It's pretty weird, isn't it? Broadcasting your sounds of your house.
As soon as you start surveilling, you make it possible for other people to use that information.
Until relatively recently, this simple analog radio technology was used in simple, cheap devices. Cordless phones, the baby monitors, the mobile phones. In more recent years, digital technology has taken over, and this makes it much harder to accidentally listen in. The issue now is that people assume that it's not interceptable. People assume that because they're communicating on a mobile phone or on a Wi-Fi network, it's going to be safe, and that's not always the case.
If you have a baby, you probably have a monitor.
I almost couldn't live without it.
Well, this happened to one Tri-State house. Someone else was watching too.
It felt like somebody broke into our house.
A cyber door directly into your home.
More and more people buy a piece of technology and they just assume that it's all up and running and that it's safe.
They woke up in the middle of the night to hear a guy yelling,
"Wake up, baby, wake up, baby, wake up, baby, wake up, baby, wake up, baby."
They don't read the terms and conditions, they don't read the privacy policy, and they don't change the password that's given.
My name's Ashley Stanley. I'm a professional nanny for a 15-month-old. Currently, I live in Houston, Texas. My family uses a surveillance camera. You can hook it up anywhere, and it's connected to the family's Wi-Fi. On the camera, there is a microphone, and it's two-way, so you can not only hear the child, but you can also speak to the child.
Just another Monday for nanny Ashley Stanley.
I got to my charge's house and we ate breakfast and we're getting cleaned up and went into her room to change a diaper. So as I'm changing her diaper, I hear out of the room some noises and I'm thinking maybe there's a toy that goes off because sometimes toys just go off by themselves. And after realizing it was actually a man's voice, I looked over at the camera and realized that's where the sound was coming from. I kind of laughed it off like, haha, you know, someone's playing a trick on me, it's probably my boss's because we're pretty close. So I just kind of said, you know, that's funny, Rick, you're being silly. And a voice from the camera clearly said, "I don't think I am who you think I am."
It's possible to break in and hack a baby monitor.
I kind of went into shock. So I finished cleaning up the baby and putting her diaper on. And while I'm doing this, the voice says, "That's a really cute baby you have."
I didn't realize they could actually take control of the camera.
Actually, the camera is typically pointed down at the crib.
And move the camera around in the room.
It came up and was looking where the diaper changing area was. The voice did sound young, because this guy was actually informative. He helped us realize that this camera was being pretty much just broadcasted to the world for anyone to see. And he actually told me that I should probably password protect my camera. Then said goodbye, and then I didn't hear him anymore. What I'm afraid of is, like, who's been watching and not saying anything?
Police try to identify households with webcams that could have had their everyday lives broadcast on the internet by Russian hackers.
We are facing a new set of risks that most of us don't understand. Anything that's online has the potential to be used by somebody that we don't know.
Webcams, CCTV systems, and even baby monitors.
I'm Renata Sampson, Chief Executive of Big Brother Watch. Russian hackers got into, I think it was something like 73,000 webcams across the world and put up the footage that they saw on the internet.
It's actually, now I know it's there, I kind of think, I want to have a look now.
All of us in terms of society have a sense of voyeurism.
We're nosy, I'm not a weirdo. Just clicking through now on page 4 of 586. We've got a driveway, a car park. This is someone's hallway. There's one here, someone's bookshelf. There's a lady with her back to me. She's surfing the internet. Can even see what she's actually looking at. I could probably tell you she's having a cup of coffee as well. And if she was turned this way, you could easily see her face. These people don't know that I'm looking at them, which is kind of weird. This is someone's living room. Sofa, telly. That's in United States, Massachusetts. Quite early. They're probably getting ready for work. There's a towel on the side there. Kind of weird, isn't it? Indoor pan tilt IP camera. And on the left-hand side, there's a little panning control. See if I can go up. Oh, yeah, we just moved up. I clicked up and now I'm looking a little bit more at the ceiling. California, San Jose. No one's there at the moment. On the floor are kids' toys. Looks like, you know, a little train track, some Lego. Got my finger down and now I'm panning full left, full right. I can even see the shelf the camera's on now. In fact, I feel like I want to move the camera so that it's facing the other way so the people that live there can kind of go, what's happened to our camera? Hopefully they'll realise that now.
These products will be sold to us as keep your home safe, protect your family and belongings, and yet the way we may end up using them could do absolutely the opposite.
A lot of this technology simply creates additional insecurities and amplifies anxieties rather than reassures. The more you use, the more you become their prisoner. It's a kind of a performance, it's a kind of ritual of security rather than anything else.
I have two children. I have a son who is still in a crib, and I have a daughter who's 4. All of our neighbors have video monitors. But we didn't do any baby monitors at all. I didn't want to feel like I was surveilling my baby, and I didn't want to feel like I was relying on this electronic device in my bedroom. It felt weird.
Wake Up, Baby was produced by Peregrine Andrews. It was a Falling Tree production for BBC Radio 3. Special thanks to Alan Hall and Eleanor McDowell. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The editor is Nick White. The associate producer is Carla Green. Podcast the show on iTunes, follow the show on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.com.